This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're tuned in to the Prop Show on the Morning Run, our weekly take on all things property related. I'm Sim Wee Boon. It's the last Friday of the month, and as usual, is the Property Legal Clinic today. And our guest is lawyer and author Khairul Anwar Shahruddin. Welcome to the show, Khairul. Right off the bat, our first question comes from Nicole, and this is the situation that she's describing. I've got a tenant that wants to vacate the apartment that she's renting from me. Problem is, we signed a contract and she still wants her deposit back even though she notified me at the very last minute. And she's left the country because of COVID-19. What can I do? So what can Nicole do, Khairul?
Okay, I see the question. And it's actually about the intention of the money that she took. Okay. Let's go on the tenancy. In tenancy, we don't really have a specific contract to follow. Even if it's written, it's up to both parties to come up with the terms and what is the governing the whole thing, the whole tenancy. Between 18 March of 2020 until, because the timing, she didn't mention the time. And 31st December 2020, we have this COVID-19 Act, we call it, okay? That COVID-19 Act is supposed to suspend all the contractual obligation of people. But we don't have a Tenancy Act. So nothing is suspended about or Contract Act. It wasn't part of the COVID-19 Act. So any contract you enter is still in effect. And you still have to you are bound by the terms. And when this happened, the intention of the money taken that the tenant asked to be written is for it to cover any eventuality of, say, there's damages to the property or there's unpaid bills. Unless those things happen, she actually has to return the deposit back to the tenant, okay? Because the intention of it, the real reason she took the deposit, why? Okay, is because when you enter into a tenancy agreement, you take the deposit, as I said, to secure against any damages or things that happen to the property when the tenant is there. And then utility deposit to cover any electricity bill or if it's an apartment, maybe any maintenance bill due to them staying there within the time period. So I would advise her to return the deposit if there is no more reason for her to hold the deposit, because it's called a deposit. When you take a deposit, you must return it after it's because it's a security deposit. You must return it as after your contract with the tenant is ended.
Moving on to our next question, this comes from Evelyn, and she's asking: are there any SOPs or rules on moving in and out of your apartment during the current MCO or CMCO? She said she's tried searching but found nothing clear. I guess she was searching it online. So she's asking because the situation that she's describing is that she's due to move apartments in March, and when she inquired with the police, they said that she needs to get management approval from the apartment she's moving into. But when she asked the management, they said that they cannot because of SOPs, and her contract with the place that she's renting now is due to expire soon. So I guess she doesn't want to fork out rent for two places, and she doesn't want to be stuck in between moving and, you know, unclear about things. I mean, what's your experience with this? Has there been any issues or SOPs that you've stumbled on in regards moving in and out of condominiums or houses?
Okay, in terms of this issue specifically, it's not really about housing issue. I mean, it's actually about let's go to the utmost things that is hanging on everybody's head. This is the darurat time, okay? So this SOP can change at any moment, at any time. So although it is put on the management to come up with the SOP is them, that they has to tell how to go about moving in, because she need to talk to them, negotiate with them, because they have to come up with the SOPs, because the police also is doing only what the Majlis Keselamatan Negara has outlined. Okay, they are making sure that everybody is keeping to the social distance, wearing masks, and all the thing that we are trying to do to make ourselves healthy against this COVID-19. So the management is the one that has to come up with the SOP on how she get to move into her property. If there is my worst case scenario, she might even have to go to a tribunal to the strata. I think it's an apartment, the strata tribunal, and ask this management to actually allow her to go in her apartment, and because she still has time, it's March, so and come up with the SOPs. That SOPs must be coming from the management. It cannot be coming from the police. For now, we don't really have a specific SOPs for moving houses. I cannot find it too. And I haven't had any people referring me this type of cases to settle. So it is the management that has to come up, and they should be allow it, and they must come up with the standard operating procedure of someone moving in into apartment within their compound. Because actually, without the COVID-19 situation currently in place, management usually have an SOPs on which lift to use, which place that what time can renovation be done, moving in can be done. That is a normal SOPs that all condominium has. So it is just additional one that they have to put in, such as you have to wear masks, you have to make sure you have to cover everything, or making sure that your lorry is not blocking anything. So that SOP is, must be extended to how we make sure that people are not going to get sick from doing the stuff that you are doing while you are moving in.
Okay, so in conclusion, she needs to talk to the management and to clarify what exactly
yes,
that SOP
the management,
is.
The police is correct. Yep. The management is the one that has to come up with the SOPs. The police is only giving her the leeway. And this doesn't come into question if you're moving into a landed property. Unless your landed property has is gated and guarded, is under a strata, a landed strata. That's a totally different.
So if it's,
they also have to have an SOP.
So if it's just a house with no gated community, there's no real SOPs. You just need you are allowed to move.
Yeah, if it's a let me give an example. If it's a kampung house where you can come up to the driveway, there's no, as long as you are when you are outside it and you are making sure that everything is under whatever rules that we are having under our SOPs now, that will be the rule that you have to follow.
Yeah, but like you said, given that we're in an emergency period, You got to stay alert because SOPs can change at any moment. Okay, we're going to take a short break for some messages. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're tuning into The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon and I have Khairul Anwar Shaharuddin with me. He's a lawyer and author, and this is the monthly property legal clinic. It takes place every last Friday of the month. Our next question comes from Daniel, and this is the situation that he's describing. I bought a service apartment in Old Klang Road 3 years ago when it was launched. Now it has finished construction and I've received the vacant possession letter. But the problem is the official postal address for the apartment and the name of which when it was sold to me is different. It's an English name and now it's a Malay name. To add on, the location of the building is still in the same area in Old Klang Road, but the postal address doesn't mention Old Klang Road. I checked with the developer and they said that DBKL requires a Malay name, but he assured me that the signage and the name of the building that's physically there is still the same. What I want to know is, did the developer misrepresent itself when it sold me the service apartment? What are your thoughts on this, Carol?
I think it's more like the procedure of them informing the buyer. Okay, I think they should have, when they, because a name of a particular property area it's up to the local authority to decide. Once they agree on it, by agreeing, approve it, then they will impose it on the developer. When the developer get that, they should have sent out letters or informing every buyer that this is the case. That because when they sell, they usually have a kind of the name of a particular that they still getting approval. Okay, and usually it's settled before during the pre-construction. They will have settled the name and everything. But sometimes it happens where the local authority will impose certain condition or like the name change. But I'm not sure when that happened in this particular property. So that the developer itself might not have time to inform the purchasers. So when this happened, it might not be a representation at all. It might be that they are stuck with the decision by the local authority. When they sell it, as I said, they might have come up with the name, the Gen 2 name. But when they finally get it, it might not be what they want. In terms of misrepresentation, the fact of the case, you have to go to the timeline. The developer should be asked why was this change happened, and yeah, I wouldn't say that the developer, I'm not trying to side with the developer or anything, but they are also stuck with whatever decision by the local authority.
So is there such a thing that the DBKL or local authority requires a Malay name for a property on the land itself? I mean, is that true? Does it apply to shop lots and all as well?
In terms of name, it depends on the local authority. I wouldn't say there's a rule about it, because there's a lot of other name which is not in Bahasa Malaysia. That we have, there's Hampshire, what there's a few names, there's a few names that doesn't have any connotation of Bahasa Malaysia at all. So I don't know the fact why they require it to be changed. It might be about the mayor wanting to have the name, or DBKL itself wanting to propose Malaysian name.
So at the end, it's up to the local authority lah.
Yes, it's the local authority. They have the right.
Okay.
They do have that right. But in terms of ni, usually our guardian of Bahasa Malaysia is DBP, Dewan Bahasa and Pustaka. Not really. Ni, that's where we need. But at that particular moment, there might have been a need for our authority to suggest more Bahasa Malaysian name than any other name.
So the best course of action would be for Daniel to go back to the developer and clarify on the timeline, and then maybe they can find out what's going on there. I think the second part of his question now is that, can the residents band together and apply with DBKL for a name change?
That one, I can straight away answer yes, if they can get it. But the developer also must come into the picture, because the timeline of how property is handed over, you have that one year where the developer is still part of the management corporation, and then after that is the resident itself governing themselves. So it can be done, but it must be kind of I would say a class action with them banding together and go to the local authority.
Okay. He wants to know if there's any compensation he can seek with the developer because of the name change, because he's asking this in a context that he believes that the name change and perhaps address change might affect rental or sales price in the future.
Yeah, it's related to the first question just now that I answered. I believe that he has to go through with the developer the timeline, the name, and because they are strata property, I would suggest to save his cost, he should take the developer to the, if he wants to be confrontational about it, to the strata tribunal first. Use the strata tribunal as a place to settle. And then if not, then you can go to the High Court.
Mm. And I mean, the best way also would maybe to get the residents to band together instead of a single person, but that might be more effective to talk about it.
Yeah, but he's looking for compensation for himself. That one might be single person crusade lah. Not really. The change of name might be good for them to band together.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so the last part of the question comes from me, and this is on a recent conversation that I've noticed that, you know, property experts have weighed in on a government's move to table the Residential Tenancy Act, which may see rental price being controlled through legislation. Maybe you can give some of your thoughts on the implications of a rent control law.
We had the rent control law before, which was repealed in 1992 or 1991. So that one that one is specifically related to pre-war buildings, which my family had one before. This is a personal experience. So during that time, you ran even profit if the business which ran where you have a tenancy with the tenant, even if it's profitable, also you have only can rent it up until around 500 to 700 ringgit or much lower than that. I can't remember because that time it was I was still in school. So it was and Penang had it also. These places are mostly pre-war buildings, so it affects when you're talking about Rent Control Act, it's totally different. And I think the one that we are moving forward to are Residential Tenancy Act, not really a Rent Control Act. Mm. So the Residential Tenancy Act, you can see it with the Strata Management Act, which is currently in effect, and that is mostly about how do you and the issue that we had today, like the deposit from that you take, the security deposit, the utility deposit, how you take it and how you return it, and then the issue between tenant and landlord about what type of rights that both parties have. And the unit itself, if it's damaged, if it's if things happen to it, the insurance of property, who should be taking it, who should get the benefit of the payout if anything happened to it. So I think that is the more pertinent questions that the Residential Tenancy Act will address. And it's not really about controlling the price of the, because I think this is already 2021, the same. So I think our government would not try to control the rental price of residential property using a specific law. I think it's more about the rights between the two parties governing any tenancy that we have in Malaysia.
And of course, a lot of the details are still haven't been ironed out
it's
yet.
It's a bit sketchy.
So I guess we could say what these are the concerns, and the main concerns of how it would affect price. And should the Act have no mention of or no direct interference with price, then it would be good. Because I think the bigger issue with the need for a Residency Act is that evictions, unlawful evictions, and this Act would probably help protect them?
Yes. One point, as we were talking about just now about the COVID-19 Act, the problem with the COVID-19 Act, why there's no mention about any tenancy dispute or anything, is because there's no act to be mentioned about. Currently, where our tenancy rights come from is only section 223 of the Land Code, 1965. So that particular knee is about you can do a tenancy without registration up until 3 years. Okay. And if it's above 3 years, you have to register and it's called a lease, and you have to register it at the land office. That's all. That's the only mention about tenancy and leasing in Malaysia currently. Okay, it affects any land in Semenanjung Malaysia. Okay, and the concurrent act also is in Sabah and Sarawak. That particular clause. That's the only one. In terms of going to court or even tribunal, we have the strata tribunal, which is settling a lot of this issue now, if it's a strata property. But in landed property and everything, people do go to court and settle it without using the tribunal. And it costs a lot of money between landlord and tenant. Yeah, it's an issue that must be addressed. I think is a good move by the government to have this act on the table.
And of course, this is an ongoing conversation because the act is only due to be tabled in Parliament next year. So plenty more time to talk about this. That's all the time we have for today's show, the Monthly Property Legal Clinic on the Property Show. Thank you for coming on, Khairul. I've been speaking to lawyer and author Khairul Anwar Shaharuddin. Join us again next month as we try to help shed some light on your property legal conundrums. Send us your questions at property@bfm.my or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We've got the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.